Thank you. So yeah, thanks for the invitation, and it's great to be here. This is my first time, and you know, it's a fantastic place. So I want to tell today about some work in the last, I guess, couple of years on the general question of phase transition, in particular holographic phase transitions in the early universe. And this is work done with Lisa. This will be based on these two papers, which we put out last year, in the end of last year and early this year. And there is some, I mean, it, as hopefully will become clear in the talk, it has opened up more questions, and so some of those are in progress, and you know, we are working on that. So just some broad motivation before we get into the details. Strongly coupled theories appear in many BSM directions. You know, traditionally they were thought about for trying to understand naturalness, more recently for dark matter and dark sectors, for composite axions. And the phenomenologically relevant theories are usually confining theories with a small confinement scale, generated via dimensional transmutation like in QCD, right? So you can naturally generate a small IR scale compared to the UV scale like it happens in QCD. And the RS model, or the RS framework, I should say, it provides a way to calculate these things using ADS-CFT. So, you know, in general, it's very hard to say anything precise about strong dynamics, but if you have a dual description for at least a special class of strongly coupled theories, which you can describe in the holographic picture, then you can make some precise statements about those theories. So these things have been studied a lot in the last how so many years, you know, many people have spent a lot of time on that. But I want to focus on the early universe cosmology. Early universe cosmology is actually interesting because the strong dynamics can generate many interesting phenomena. In particular, if certain conditions are satisfied, because these are confining theories, you will have a deconfinement-confinement transition in the early universe. So if these, you know, the thing I'm thinking about is if you have some strongly coupled sector that is populated after, you know, inflation and after reheating, and it's in the hot phase, then if, as the temperature of the universe goes down, at some point it will do a transition, right? And that can have interesting consequences. It can also give you non-standard cosmologies with changing scale factors. I will focus on the confinement, the deconfinement-confinement transition. The phenomenological relevance of this question is that it can lead to stochastic gravitational waves under certain conditions, which might be visible in the present and upcoming detectors. So for example, this is just a cartoon with the frequency and the characteristic strain, and you know, you depending on where the peak frequency of the gravitational wave signal is, you might be sensitive to pulsar timing arrays, to LISA, to you know, DISIGO, BBO, and stuff like that. You know, and we know that many of these experiments, I mean, LISA, for example, was approved. You know, so it is interesting to keep that in mind. Right, so that's a phenomenological motivation to think about this.
So the strongly coupled sector is dark. Or it's part of
it doesn't have to be. So I will say it. Traditionally, it didn't have to be dark. Traditionally, this whole field developed by trying to explain the electroweak hierarchy. So it was not dark. It was coupled to the, you know, I mean, it was very much part of the standard model. And that usually means that the confinement scale that you're thinking about, is it related to the electroweak scale or not? If it's a dark sector, then it's a free parameter. It can be wherever it wants to be, right? If it's not, then it should be somehow related to the electroweak scale. So maybe TeV, 10 TeV, whatever you want to do, right? And both of them lead to their own interesting good things and bad things, which I will mention.
But there are already strong constraints on that, right?
Yes, there are constraints. Yes. There are constraints. Collider constraints, for example, right? Which will say you shouldn't have scale too low, right? So So just to make the cartoon more clear, you know, in the early universe, so the temperature is decreasing from here to here as the time increases. And there's a confinement scale, and the temperature is of the order of confinement scale at some point. You know, this is the dotted line. So you expect that at very high temperatures, the theory would like to be in the deconfined phase. And at very low temperatures, the theory would like to be in the confined phase. This is the statement of statics, right? So this is just a stable thing that you would expect. The dynamics is more interesting. It is saying that if you started in the metastable phase, how does the system go to the stable phase, right? So you can start in the deconfined phase, and as the temperature lowers, it should want to go to the confined phase, and this will happen dynamically through some process. Now, what happens is that in this thing which has been studied, oh, by the way, I forgot to say, feel free to ask any questions, which you did, and I have a lot of slides, so I don't know, I don't have to go all the way and cover all my slides. It's better if you understand what I'm talking about.
You don't want to cover some slides.
No. The generic prediction in these theories is a period of supercooling. Okay, so maybe you know, maybe you don't know. Supercooling is this phenomena which is seen for cold water. You know, when you cool water past its freezing temperature, it stays water. And of course, if you do something to it, it becomes ice very quickly. So that's just a little cartoon of that. In this context, the supercooling translates into a small rate of transition from the deconfined phase to the confined phase. So the deconfined phase is the water. The confined phase is the ice. And once the temperature is such that you should want to be in the confined phase, but you are still in the deconfined phase, because the rate is too small, it's like supercooled water, right? So this is what people mean, that these theories are supercooled if the rate is small. Now, is this a good thing or a bad thing, right? Depends. So this is the question that you were asking. If these theories are related to electroweak hierarchy problem and naturalness and whatnot, and the confinement scale is TV, and if there is supercooling, which means that the theory stays in the deconfined phase as the temperature keeps reducing, at some point you're going to hit the BBN temperature, and we just have too much radiation, and that's not a good thing, right? So this is how this, so you know, a small rate slash supercooling presents a challenge for embedding into the standard picture of cosmology. This is how, at least in the RS context, the field of asking these questions in cosmology started, because one of the earliest papers, which I will refer to later, by Cremonelli, Nicolas, and Ratazzi, was saying that it's not viable. The RS model in the context of cosmology is not viable because they calculated these constraints in some assumptions, and they found that you need the n of the dual theory, which should be large for good control, is smaller than 1 if you want to fit it into the. Alternatively, but no, the perspective has changed, and many more work has been done in the last 20 years to relax that, and so you know I will talk about it. The other thing is, of course, you could say this is just a separate dark sector, and the confinement scale is a free parameter. Now, in these decoupled dark sectors, the small rate is actually interesting because it can lead to, for example, it can enhance the gravitational wave signals if there is a period of supercooling. And there are also claims that it can give you some mechanism for primordial black hole generations, okay, and also lead to more interesting bubble wall dynamics. So long story short, it's interesting, right? If there is a supercooling or there is not a supercooling, it can have interesting consequences. And the way I want to motivate, at least one way I want to motivate this work is we want to ask how generic are these features, right? So just to take a step back, there's confining theories. We don't know how to compute them for most generality. We want to go at least to the places where we have some control, so holographic dual of confining theories. They have some features which have been claimed in the context of early universe cosmology. And we want to ask how generic are these features. Okay. So just very quick review so that we are on the same page for people who might have not seen this or seen and forgotten, you know, because not everybody's doing this now. So RS framework is a 5D space-time. It's a slice of five-dimensional area space. Area space is a solution to Einstein's equation with constant negative cosmological constant. This is Arias Poincaré patch, for those who care about that distinction. The dotted line here is the Arias boundary. And the space-time that is considered is the space-time between what is called as a UV brain and an IR brain, okay? So the space-time you consider is between these two solid lines. It has the following metric. It has the e to the minus 2r in front of the four-dimensional metric. So this is the warp factor in front of the 4D metric. And the coordinate r is between the UV and the IR, which you can choose the UV to be at 0, and then rir is a free parameter. This setup is dual to a strongly coupled CFT, coupled to four-dimensional gravity. Okay, and it's coupled to four-dimensional gravity because you have a UV brain and not the boundary. And this theory confines in the IR because you have an IR brain and not all the way to the end. Okay, so this is just that. And one thing which will be relevant, at least for the context of cosmology, is that this geometry is actually a solution for any location of where you put the IR brain. So you can put it wherever you want. It will still be a solution to equations, Einstein's equations. And if you want to fix where it should be, you have to put something more into the theory. That is usually done. One way to do it is to put a scalar in the bulk, which is called a stabilization mechanism, the Goldberger-Weiss stabilization mechanism. In the dual picture, it is like switching on a deformation of the CFT. It makes sense from a dual picture because if there is an honest CFT, then what is an IR scale, right? Any scale is a good scale. So you need to do something to the CFT so that a scale is generated dynamically. And this is also what happens in QCD, right? There's the gauge coupling runs, and it becomes big at some point, and so you know it's just trying to make it more and more realistic. Now, it turns out that if this is really a confining theory, and I just said that there are two phases of the theory, at high temperature and the low temperature, then what does the dual picture look like for the high temperature and the low temperature, right? So this is the standard thing that I just told you in the previous slide. This is the field theory which confines, right? And this is the geometry in the 5D picture. It turns out there is another solution to Einstein's equation, which looks slightly different. It looks a little bit more complicated. Okay, it has a horizon at some value of r. So how do we know that? Because one quick way to see where a horizon is that the TT component of the metric goes to 0. So this is where r equal to, at r equal to r is the TT component goes to 0. This is also a solution to Einstein's equation. Okay, and you can calculate what, and this corresponds to the hot phase. Right? So this is not usually talked about because everybody was doing before in collider physics context zero temperature stuff, right? It has a temperature because there is a horizon, and we know that horizons Hawking evaporate, and there is a temperature of the field theory dual to that, and you can calculate it. One quick way to calculate is to look at the Euclidean version of the theory and make sure the solution is smooth, blah, 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 and you get the formula for what the dual field theory temperature is. It depends on the location of the horizon. If you send the horizon further and further out, RH becomes bigger and bigger, temperature becomes smaller and smaller. That's how you go to zero temperature. Okay. Now, it turns out that this theory is this solution is actually an approximate solution. It's an approximate solution, and it becomes exact in the limit of the UV brain sent to boundary. Okay. Now, I can tell you why is it an approximate solution in the 5D language. You solve the equations, the extrinsic curvature doesn't quite match, blah, blah, blah. But if you go to the dual picture, it's very clear what's going on. You have a 4D CFD at high temperature, very high temperatures, coupled to gravity, right? So it's energy density like radiation coupled to gravity. That is going to give you a redshifting of the temperature, right? You will get an FRW radiation dominated solution. And so the temperature should slowly redshift. That's exactly what is happening in this picture. The temperature is slowly going to decrease. And so the time evolution will be that this horizon will slowly move further and further out that way. Okay. So if we want to ask about phase transition, then we should look at the free energy of the two phases that I just described, the hot phase and the cold phase, or the confined phase and the deconfined phase. Let's forget about the stabilization mechanism for a minute. So just keep it simple, just the geometry. You want to calculate the free energy. The free energy is UV divergent. You know, many quantities in field theory of UV divergent, right? So it's UV divergent in field theory. It's also UV divergent in the gravity calculation. It's more sensible to talk about the difference in the free energies, because which is the physical quantity, right? It's like choosing a renormalization condition in some way. And so when you do that, and there is an explicit computation one can do, I don't want to go into the details of it, but when you compute that, BB refers to the black brain. I didn't say it. I'm going to refer to this as the black brain because there's a brain. This is a black object, it's a horizon, and it's extended, so I'm going to call it black brain. And the confined, I will just call it RS. So the free energy difference between the black brain phase and the RS phase is given by this number. It depends on T to the fourth. That's not a surprise, because there's only one dimensionful quantity, temperature. It is proportional to the Planck scale cubed. By the way, I'm working in LADS equal to 1, you know, radius is set to 1. This M5 cubed is also not a surprise, because it's like a degrees of freedom, so you know the free energy should scale with degrees of freedom. The interesting thing is that the coefficient is negative, okay? Which is saying that this free energy is always negative at any temperature, right? You can calculate. And so now I have to start talking about this first paper, which did some of these steps in great detail, you know. So I'm going, next couple of slides will review this results from the Kremnelli-Nicolas-Tatazzi paper. And I forgot to say that the way you calculate the free energy is by looking at the thermal partition function, looking at the dominant saddle, finding that contribution, and then you can just read off the free energy by that equation. So this is how you do. There are subtleties of removing the infinities and whatnot, but I can tell you more if you are interested. So the physical thing that I want to point out is that this free energy is negative at all temperature, which means that the black brain phase is always the thermodynamically preferred phase. Okay. Now that is bizarre because, of course, this is not the real situation. And of course, the reason is because this whole calculation is done without a stabilization mechanism, right? There is no IR scale to put, there's no IR scale to begin with. So, you know, of course the black brain is always stable situation. Once you put in a stabilization mechanism, for example, a 5D scalar, in particular, you will consider some, you know, bulk action for a field, 5D field chi with some bulk potential, some brain potential. Then you can generate a location of the IR brain, which is an honest location. And now the IR brain is not a free place anymore. And in the 4D picture, one can identify the modulus, which earlier would have a flat potential if there was no stabilization mechanism, but now gets a potential because of this stabilization mechanism. So this is what people call as the Radon potential, which is generated by the Galorga-Weiss potential. Okay. So this curly phi is the Radon, and it was flat before, but now because of this, and there are a lot of details here, you get some interesting potential. the theory would like to be here, and that sets the location of the IR brain or the confinement scale. So now you have generated an honest confinement scale. Fine. So you do that, and now you go back and compute your free energy again, because now you have added some stabilization mechanism. Now what you find is that the difference between the black brain and the RS gets some additional contribution, which looks like this. So there, earlier we just had the minus T to the fourth term. Now there is some other constant in front, okay, which is the analog of the critical temperature. And now this situation is more realistic. Now the free energy is zero at the critical temperature. It is negative for T more than TC, which is to say that the black brain geometry or the deconfined phase is the favored one. And the other case, the confined phase is the favored one, right? So now it's more realistic. And this was just to say that stabilization is a critical, crucial ingredient. Otherwise, it's not realistic. Okay? So now your free energy difference shifts up and it crosses zero at some point. And now it's, yeah, now this is more, this is becoming more real.
Is TC the temperature at which the horizon matches the IR brain location?
Not quite. And I will have an equation later. So the thing is that the IR brain location and the temperature have a relationship, right? And we will see that you can calculate explicitly the relation between TC and confinement scale or IR brain location, and they're not exactly equal. And this will be a feature of the assumptions that are usually made in the last 20 years of work. So it doesn't have to be equal. Doesn't have to be equal. So I think now this is literally the next slide in which this will address that, right? So now you can be explicit and say, let's put some models, right? Let's calculate some things now that I have told you how to do the whole thing in a big picture. So let's just, and this is basically picking two of the many papers, you know. So this is the original paper by these older, you know, this is the Italian collaboration, and then these bunch of people at Maryland, you know, where they also thought about this problem more recently. So you can calculate the critical temperature. Just to remind you, the critical temperature here, this TC, is related to the minimum of the radion potential, or the potential at the minimum, okay? So you need to just calculate the radion potential given your model, and calculate the minimum, calculate the potential at the minimum, and this sets your TC for you, right? So you can do this computation explicitly. Here are two examples, which I'm gonna call A and B. The bulk Goldberger-Weiss potential is just a simple mass term. You choose some boundary conditions in the UV and the IR. You calculate the resulting radion potential. You calculate its minimum. You evaluate the potential at the minimum. From this, you read your TC, and you get the following expression, okay? What is this epsilon? This epsilon is the mass term for the Goldberger-Weiss scalar that was put in. You can do the same thing for a slightly different model, where instead of a boundary condition which is Dirichlet and Dirichlet, you can play with a different boundary condition, you get a slightly different potential. You can again calculate the TC, it'll have slightly different thing, but at the end of the day, you will always get that the TC is suppressed parametrically, at least by powers of epsilon, and that epsilon is the one which is setting this, which is the constant which appears here. And note that this epsilon is the one which, small epsilon means that you are in the limit of small back reaction. So let me explain why am I saying that. If this parameter was not small, then this bulk potential would be big. This would contribute to the stress energy tensor, and it would change the Einstein's equations, and now you would have big back reaction. So if you want to make your life simple, you don't go to that limit, which is what most of the papers have done. They keep this thing small, so the back reaction is not big. Of course, this is small is good enough to give you an interesting radiant potential. So it does do what you want it to do, right? So that's why you don't have to work at the hard problem. But one feature of this limit is that you get the critical temperature is smaller than the IR brain or the confinement scale that Daniel was asking. So these are examples with small breaking in the IR, okay? So far still, this was the question about the statics, right? The free energy. Now let's go to how this actually happens, okay? Now the full problem in its complete generality is very complicated. Which is a 5D picture, right? Because it's a 5D geometry. So the full problem is a non-perturbative, topology changing, quantum gravitational process, okay? And I will explain why I am saying those words, in which bubbles of IR brain nucleate from the horizon, expand, and collide. Okay? And this is how the phase transition happens from the deconfined phase to the confined phase. So here is a picture of how this bubble will look like. So you have this Arrhenius boundary, you have the UV brain, you have the horizon, and a little bubble of an IR brain will pop out of the horizon, okay? And there is a finite probability for this to happen. As I will show in the limits in which this calculation has been done, this process, the amplitude or, you know, the probability will scale as e to the minus 1 over the g Newton in the 5D g Newton. So this is why it's a non-perturbative process. So non-perturbative. Why is it topology changing? Well, you're going from a space-time with a black hole to a space-time without a black hole. You know, we know that the geometries near black holes are very different because some components go to zero. But there's a more simple way to see it, is to go to the Euclidean picture. So in the Euclidean picture, when you have a black hole, the space-time becomes a disk. Okay? You make the time, so here, this is the extra dimension, the time, time direction can be one of the directions on the UV brain. You make it a circle. Then this, I think I should just draw the picture here. This is the horizon, right? So if, when, once you make the time compactified to Euclidean, the smooth solution, which is the solution to equations of motion, will become like this. And of course, I can just flatten it out, and it looks like a disk, right? So that's this solution. So you want to go from a space-time with a horizon to a space-time with an IR brain, which means that you have to go from a disk to an annulus. They have different topologies, right? One is simply connected, one is not simply connected. So this is an example of a topology-changing process, which are allowed in a theory of quantum gravity because, you know, you can go to any topology you want. It turns out that somehow, interestingly enough, a complicated field theory problem, which has nothing to do with gravity, confinement, becomes dual to a topology-changing process in the quantum gravity version, which is dual to the field theory problem. Okay, so anyway, this is the process you have to calculate. And another way to represent it is that if you make time compact, and this is the UV brain location. So just take this picture and translate it, right? So put one more coordinate, which is, let's say, the radial coordinate into this picture. So you just have a cylinder. But it has to go from here to here. So it has to go from a filled cylinder to a cylinder with a hole, right? And so this is the 5D instanton schematically how it should look like, right? Somehow the cylinder should just rip open in the middle, and this is what the instanton is. And then eventually it should open at multiple places. They should collide, and they should form the whole thing. And this is how you go from one space-time to the other. Okay. Of course, this is the full generality, but this is not the generality in which these computations were done. These computations were done in the limit of small back reaction, light radion, small epsilon that is related to the question you were asking, right? So in that limit, you can ask all these questions in the four-dimensional EFT of the radion, because radion is a light field. You don't need to worry about the full five-dimensional picture. And in that picture, these guys claimed that you can map this into a false vacuum decay problem in field theory. So the free energy on the RS side just becomes the radion potential. And the free energy on the black brain side, by the way, this is an off-shell free energy because phi is not at the minimum anymore. It can be anywhere it wants. And you do want the off-shell things because you have to go from one solution to the other solution, right? So you need to go off-shell from one solution to equation of motion to another solution to equation of motion. Fine. So this is how the off-shell free energy will look like for the RS case. For the black brain case, what you do is you vary the location of the horizon. It introduces a conical singularity. You regulate the conical singularity, and you can compute that the action is still finite. And there are a lot of details that go there, but this is how this expression looks like. Okay? So in this expression, there is a TH, and there is a T. T is the temperature of the field theory, and TH is the horizon location. If you minimize this free energy, right, with respect to TH, so 6 times 4, 8 times 3, right? So you're going to minimize it at T equal to TH, which is the equilibrium configuration, at which this thing is minus 2 times 2 pi 4 times blah, 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 which is what I was showing you before, right? So just to make it more explicit, when I was writing this formula at T equal to TH, minus 2 times T to the fourth, is what you will get if you minimized this quantity as a function of TH, right? So just making it slightly off shell. Okay, so this is how the two free energies look like. But already there is a first subtlety. So there are important differences between this and just calling it a false vacuum problem. First, when you usually do a false vacuum problem, it's the same field with two minima, right? You go from one metastable vacuum to another vacuum. Here, that's not true. The field on one side is phi. The field on the other side is TH. Because conceptually, IR brain does not exist in the other phase, right? So what phi are we going to talk about? So this is zeroth order complication.
Yeah, so why temperature is the right thing? Actually, yeah. Yeah, in fact, for this free energy of the black brain, my first question, what do you mean by having temperature different from horizon temperature? And also, why do you take it as a dynamical variable?
Good. So now, the The real answer is that you don't know. But in the end, it luckily does not matter, at least in the limit in which these computations were done. So these authors say that, that this is one choice we are taking, but it is not obvious that this should be the dynamical variable to do. Mm-hmm. Okay? And in fact, that's why this problem is much more complicated in the 5D picture. But in two slides, it will become clear that basically what you're saying is saying, well, how do I know this is the right picture on this side, right? It turns out that in the limit in which the calculations have been done, this side is a subdominant contribution. So you can say, I will somehow ignore that conceptual question of how do I do it. Okay. But if you do not think about it that carefully, if you just say, what can I vary? I can just vary the location of the horizon. So that's what I'm varying, right? I'm saying that TH is not equal to T anymore, and TH is just related to RH. So like RIR was varying, RH is varying, right? So it's a natural first choice to make, but I agree that there are more subtleties, right? And it's not an obvious question. It's not an obvious choice if you think about it more carefully. But luckily, it does not matter. So this is what I want to say. The next feature is that this shape is actually very asymmetric. So this is what relates to Daniel's question, that TC and phi min, at least in the models that are considered, so TC is much smaller than phi min. By this power of epsilon. So if you go to this potential, the minimum of this side is the critical temperature, at least when the two vacua are degenerate, right? That's when the critical temperature is. And this is phi min, so this is going to be look like this, right? Smaller thing and a much longer side on one side, okay? So this is asymmetric. The second thing is that there will be temperature corrections to the picture. So usually, if I draw a potential for a field at finite temperature, I should include temperature corrections to it, right? Now, where the temperature corrections will be important depends on the value of the field with respect to the temperature, because always an expansion is over T over phi. We just said that, so first of all, the phase transition problem is only relevant for T smaller than TC, right? Because for T more than critical temperature, I don't care. The phase transition only becomes allowed when temperature falls below the critical temperature, right? So T smaller than TC, and phi min is pretty big, which means that at least here I can trust the zero temperature potential, right? Because the temperature is much smaller than TC, which is much smaller than phi min, so this is good. But at some point, you cannot do this, right? Somewhere when you go to much smaller values of phi, off shell, your temperature corrections are important. Okay. So.
Is the field thermalized?
Say again?
Is the field thermalized?
Yeah, this is always at thermal equilibrium. So at every off shell configuration, the field is, or the whole thing has a finite temperature. Which is to say that the assumption is that the strongly coupled dynamics is so strongly coupled that it always thermalizes, right? You can talk about a temperature in some way, right? It doesn't have to be true, for example, for weakly coupled description, but we are in very, very strongly coupled description. So this, yeah.
But this is four-dimensional effective field theory using all these temperature corrections to the potential as coming from some additional degrees of freedom.
Yeah, so the thing is that this is a four-dimensional theory, but who are the heavy particles? All the KK modes, right? Which we have ignored, but they will be excited. And this is how, when you have a finite temperature, at some point you will excite them, and they should contribute to your effective potential, which you can calculate. And at some point, they will become important.
So, yeah, the other question is, like, is it clear, like, between phi min and TC, there's not a third phase which can exist?
Between phi min and TC?
Yeah.
At least in this simple picture, no, because the two phases just correspond to two different minima. But there can be more, if I understand your question correctly, you're saying, well, the potential can do more interesting things here, right? It might have some more metastable minima, and they will probably correspond to different phases. Maybe. But at the level of detail that I have said so far, these are the only two choices. In fact, we will see later, if I get to the second part of the talk, which we will see, there is a possibility of another phase, which makes the question much more complicated and interesting in some way. So far, no. So this is one feature, right? So just to quickly remind you, first thing is the fields are not the same on the two sides. Second is the potential is very stretched out. Third is there are temperature dependence to the potential. And the fourth is that this side of the potential changes with temperature. So when your temperature is much bigger than TC, this side becomes much more deeper, and because that should be the stable phase at high temperature. When temperature is equal to the critical temperature, the two vacua are degenerate. When temperature is smaller than the critical temperature, this is metastable, right? So this is changing with temperature, this side. Okay. Now, with those caveats, you want to calculate the tunneling rate in the Euclidean version of the theory, assuming thermal equilibrium, all those qualifiers, right? Now, this is the confined phase, if we want to set the cosmological constant to zero here, then that means that the deconfined phase inflates, right? It has positive vacuum energy compared to the zero there, right? Which means that whatever the rate that you will calculate, it has to compete against the evolution, the inflation, right? So the condition should be that whatever rate that you calculate for this process should be more than the Hubble to the fourth, right? In the full Hubble volume, the probability should be one or more. So this is the condition. Gamma should be more than Hubble to the fourth. And you can estimate Hubble by the Friedman equations, by the vacuum energy, if it dominates. And the vacuum energy is related to the critical temperature. So the critical temperature that you calculated before sets the vacuum energy.
I assume in here that the universe is dominated
by the,
like the temperature of the dark sector equal.
Yes, yes, yes. So if there was other component, then that would change this equation. Yeah. Yeah, and so this is the condition you want. Gamma should be more than Hubble to the fourth. When this condition is satisfied, depending on what gamma is, at some temperature T nucleation, Tn, that's when the phase transition becomes possible. Okay? And in particular, if Tn is much smaller than Tc, this is supercooling. Because Tc is the temperature at which you should have, Tc is the temperature at which it is allowed to change phases, but it doesn't happen for a long time. It happens at Tn. So in between, you are stuck in the wrong phase, right? And this is your supercooling. Okay, so the estimate for this bounce action was given in this first paper by basically ignoring all the places where there are subtleties, right? So they said, forget about this black hole contribution, forget about this temperature contribution. Why can you do that? Because this shape is so elongated. Remember, this shape is so elongated because of this small parameter epsilon, right? Epsilon was the thing which was making the back reaction small. Epsilon was a parameter which was making phi min much more bigger than Tc. And you can map this problem into just a tunneling with starting with here and just tunneling to there. So don't forget about this detail. And I will show you an equation which will make it precise, because you should find that if you drop this contribution should somehow be enhanced with just by epsilon, right? Otherwise, this is not correct what we are saying about. So now let's go back to the models A and B that I was telling you before, right? Where we had put in these radion potentials that we had calculated. In the thin wall limit, which is to say T is smaller than Tc but kind of close by, you can calculate the bounce action, Euclidean bounce action. It turns out that O3 is the right bounce action to look at. And so the bounce action is O3 bounce action. And yeah, so this is the full bounce action which will go in the exponent. And this has the following form, okay? So what are the things that I want to point out to you? First is that it's always, so there's some numerical factor, there's an n square in front. N square is same as the Planck scale cubed. Planck scale cubed is 1 over g Newton. So this is the e to the minus 1 over g Newton, the non-perturbative thing that I was pointing out, right? This is how you're going to get that. Second, the denominators. The denominators are always something which is the epsilons sit in the denominator. This was the epsilon which was making the potential very stretched. So this is saying that the contribution from the bounce action is enhanced by epsilon, right? So in the limit that you can drop all this stuff, the rest of the stuff gives you a very big answer. Okay, so this is what these things are telling you. And then the purple is just the temperature dependence, which has a nice analytic form when you are in the thin wall. It will change when you go to the thick wall. Okay, so I think this at this point summarizes the review that I wanted to say, right? Which was necessary, so we know what we're talking about. The general structure of the decay rate has this form. It's e to the minus n square over delta times some function of the temperature. N square is just the degrees of freedom. And you can just look at this formula here, right? So n square is just the degrees of freedom. We want it to be larger than 1 for theoretical control. Delta is some measure of a CFT breaking. In these examples, it's so small. So delta is small, which means that the whole thing is big. And then f is some function which is kind of order 1 when it's in the thin wall limit. And all these features make the rate small.
Sorry, I'm a little bit confused. So f, if it's, wouldn't you expect that the thin wall limit introduces some additional suppression so that f is?
Say again, I didn't hear.
Well, usually when you consider the thin wall limit, right, usually that introduces an additional suppression to the action. It's like when you compare the thin wall solution with the true solution.
Well, I would imagine that, yeah, so that's right. So this is order one. So in other words, you're saying, look, the thin wall will be more suppressed compared to thick wall because the thick wall has a big gap, right? You want to really tunnel, which will translate into the fact that this function is order one, but it will become smaller than one. But at this point, I have not told you that, right? So yes, but you are absolutely right that you would not know the analytic form for this function. You will calculate it numerically, and you will see that the function is becoming smaller. Of course, at some point, the approximation will break down because this whole thing is assuming that the contribution from this side is subleading, so you shouldn't make it too small, right? So it's, yeah. So just to put it in a more broader context, this is a calculation of the rate in 4D effective field theory. This is how it looks like. And this allows you to understand basically all the work that has been done in the last 20 years by just understanding who varied what in this formula. So what are the options to change the rate? Of course, there are three options that you have. You can change N, you can change delta, you can change F, right? So delta, which is a measure of CFT breaking in the IR, in principle, the CFT breaking in the IR can be different in the UV, right? I mean, the CFT breaking doesn't have to be the same as you go from high energies to low energy. It's a very natural expectation. And so CFT breaking in IR can be different and larger than in UV. It can come entirely from CFT dynamics, or it can come from other fields that the CFT couples to. So this was, for example, in this recent paper by Chaki et al., they considered an explicit CFT breaking. So it's basically making the breaking bigger in the IR. The Maryland papers also do the same thing. They just go from one UV fixed point to another IR fixed point. It's also effectively making the CFT breaking bigger in the IR. These papers by Geraldine and collaborators and Pomerol and collaborators are coupling the CFT to QCD. And they're saying the QCD does something to the CFT, and that's also making the CFT breaking bigger in the IR. So that's just one uniform way to understand who is doing what. Okay. F, of course, as was pointed out, so this is computed in the thin wall. You can make it as the universe supercools. The thin wall is not a good approximation because temperature keeps dropping. The gap becomes bigger and bigger. It's complicated to calculate. One can do it numerically. This was what was pointed out in this paper. So they're just changing this function, and they're getting a bigger rate. Actually, they're doing both delta and F over F, and they're changing both delta and this function, but yeah. So the third option is to change N. N in the IR can again be different in the UV. We know from examples of cascading gauge theories that, you know, it starts with some value of N and reduces. So this, for example, was studied in an older paper by John March Russell and collaborators, where they tried to connect an RS geometry to model what is called as a Klebanov cyclone solution, which is dual to the cascading gauge theory solution, and it corresponds to reducing N from UV to the IR, and then they just argued that this will change the rate, okay? So, and of course, these are all work done in the Radeon EFT. The question is, what happens when you go outside Radeon EFT, okay? Of course, all these approaches run out of theoretical control anyway, so you shouldn't really trust the 4D calculation forever, but yeah, it's not clear what happens once you go outside Radeon EFT. Okay, so how much I have?
Like 20 minutes.
Yeah, so I have done step zero now, right? Which is I've told you the status of the field, and now there are two papers to tell you about. So we will see, but I want to say at least the interesting things, and we can talk about it more. So step one, so the first paper that I want to talk about is actually similar to what has been done by many people, but a little bit more generic. And that falls under this category of changing delta, okay? People had done much more elaborate things to change delta. What we wanted to point out, and we want to stay in the 4D picture, so small back reaction, let's not make everything complicated all at once, right? So you increase delta. One simple observation is that this delta, which is a CFT breaking, is parameterized by the beta function of the deformation of the CFT, right? You have a CFT, you have a deformation, there will be a beta function introduced. The beta function generically will have some term, but it'll have some higher order terms, right? Okay, so this is the 4D picture. In the 5D picture, you introduce a Golovkov scalar with some bulk potential, and you look at the equations of motion for the bulk potential. If the bulk potential has a mass term and just a mass term, that corresponds to just the first term in the beta function. If you include higher order terms in the Golovkov potential, which is very generic, those corresponds to the higher order terms in the beta function, right? So even if your coefficient lambda, which is the deformation, was very small to begin with, at some point this is not going to be small, right? At some point this will start becoming bigger and bigger. As lambda grows, lambda square is not that small compared to lambda, and lambda cubes is not that small compared to lambda square, which is to say, in this picture, as your field chi starts with a small value and grows, chi cube starts to become comparable to chi square, and chi fourth starts to become comparable to chi cube, right? And so with this motivation, what we studied is to just say, let's add a self-interaction term to the Goldberger-Weiss potential and run the whole story that people have done to see what happens. Okay? It's morally very similar to all the other work because you're just making the CFT breaking bigger in the IR, right? Okay. So I'm going to skip a lot of details, but what happens is can be shown in this picture. So you can solve the equations of motion for the profile numerically, analytically. You can calculate the radiant potential. Here are four parameter choices. The blue is with no self-interaction. So sorry, I should say, I'm going to call the self-interaction term epsilon 3 and the mass term epsilon 2. Okay. Also, I will choose these coefficients to be negative because that is the expectation from field theory. Your deformation should become bigger in the IR. Okay. So that's choosing which sign to choose for these, right? Which from a 5D point of view are free things. You don't know what to choose, but from a 4D point of view, this is the right thing to do. Okay, so for four choice of parameters, one with no epsilon 3 and one with non-zero varying amounts of non-zero epsilon 3, what you find is that the radiant potential becomes deeper. Okay, the minimum location is the same, so your IR scale is still the same, but your mass of the radian, or which corresponds to the second derivative, right, is becoming bigger and bigger as you switch on self-interaction. That's not surprising. You're making the CFT breaking bigger and bigger in the IR, so in the limit of zero CFT breaking, the radian is massless. It's a Goldstone boson. So you're making it bigger and bigger, so your mass is getting bigger and bigger. Okay, so this is not a surprise. Okay, and now you can calculate the rate for the phase transition with this new potential. Okay, so again, I will use the approach which has been used in the literature. You stay in the radian effective field theory, small back reaction. You have to I will not stay in thin wall. Right? I want to relax that assumption. So this is the bound section you want to minimize. Kinetic term, potential, minus the contribution from the false vacuum, right? So this is the thing. You can rescale it to write it in some nicer way. So, you know, X and Y are just dimensionless quantities. The thing to point out here is that this is how your N square sits here in front. So bound section scales as N square. This parameter is the delta, the small CFT breaking in the denominator. And the whole effect of the CFT breaking sits in this function here. So in other words, if this was an exact CFT, this would just be y to the fourth. And the whole bounce action would just be numerical, right? Like there's no dependence on temperature. It would just be a number. It wouldn't depend on temperature. Because of the CFT breaking, there is a non-trivial function there. And this is how the bounce action will become temperature dependent. So you can calculate this. And as I was saying before, that you know you need to calculate the rate and compare it to Hubble. Hubble can be calculated using the Friedman equations. And so this condition that the gamma should be more than Hubble to the fourth, we take the log and massage it appropriately, says the bound section should be smaller than some quantity. Right? If the bound section is too big, the rate is too small. So bound section should not be too big. It should be smaller than something. So this is for the condition for the phase transition to complete. SD less than SB max. When they're equal, that defines the nucleation temperature. SB equal to SB max is your nucleation temperature. And remember, I have been saying this again and again, that the bound section scales as N squared. So this effectively tells you what the maximum N you can accept, right? This was the whole game to begin with. Can you make N equal to 1 or N equal to 10? What is N, right? So because the bigger the N is, the bigger the bound section is, and you're dead. So you can't make N too big, right? So this will translate into that. So here are the results. For the same four choices, A, B, C, D that I was showing before with zero epsilon 3 and non-zero epsilon 3, this is how the bound section looks like. So this is bound section normalized by N squared or M5 cubed. So this is for N equal to 1. This dotted line is the maximum that the bound section can be to complete the phase transition. The solid lines are the thin wall answers. Okay. And the dotted lines, which are calculated numerically, are the thick wall answers. So first of all, they match nicely. I mean, if you extrapolate it, this blue will match the blue, the green will match the green. Second is that the thin wall is only, sorry, this x-axis is T over TC. The thin wall is only true when T is very close to TC, so you should only look at the solid lines very close to here. You shouldn't look at the rest of the part, right? That's just plotted there to show how it is. Okay, so this is saying that as you introduce bigger and bigger amounts of self-interaction, the bound section reduces. Okay, so it's making the rate faster. Okay, of course, this is at n equal to 1, so you can alternatively calculate how much n I need to have for this dashed curve to cross the dotted curve at a given value of tn, and that's this plot. So it's tn over tc as a function of n max that you can accept. And so you kind of go to order 10. And this, by the way, is the best that all works have done. They always go to order 10 n. And what this work is saying is that something which is very simply motivated from a field theory point of view, just consider self-interactions, because these are higher terms of the Weber function. It does the same thing. Instead of very elaborate models that you have to assume that UV CFT goes to an IR CFT with all these things. Okay.
So the interaction strengths you add, is there like a phi where you lose?
Perturbativity, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So why did I say 10 and not, I don't know, what is this, 20, 15? Two things are going on. One is that, first, as you make the epsilon 3 bigger and bigger, the radion is becoming heavier and heavier. At some point, radion EFT is not a good approximation. So you shouldn't trust the answer, right? Second, which is also important, is as this bound section is becoming smaller and smaller, remember, we dropped a subleading contribution to the bound section in the beginning, right? When we estimated the fact that, look, there's a big lopsided potential, so we chopped off something. So you have to make sure that this doesn't become so small that this is not a leading contribution anymore. So both of those are telling you that the self-interaction cannot be arbitrarily made big, because you are going out of the 4D description. Okay? And I think I can skip this, but this is the summary of what Junwoo is asking is, if you just plot n max as a function of epsilon 3, which just also can be translated to the mass of the radion with respect to the IR scale, when you have epsilon 3 is very small, your mass is very light, but your n max that is allowed is very small. As you start making the radion heavier and heavier and heavier, your n max increases, but at some point you're so close to 1 that you shouldn't trust the picture. Right? So these are the four data points that I was showing you. Same thing here for beta, which I did not talk about, but you know, this is relevant for the gravitational wave story. Okay, so this is part one. I have skipped a lot of details of how the calculation is done, but just to summarize, the statement is with a very simple modification, you get kind of the same thing that other considerations have done. Okay. And this is suggesting that, of course, this N situation is getting better, but you're going out of radion effective field theory, so you should maybe do a 5D analysis. You should not stay in the 4D picture. So I'm going to go to part two in 10 minutes. Okay. Part two is to do the other option, which is reduce n. But go and do this in the 5D picture, not in the 4D picture. Okay. Now, let me motivate why. So I want to work in the 5D picture. I want to work in the large back reaction limit, not in the small back reaction limit anymore. What's the motivation for this? Motivation is that in many realistic examples, the results are very, very, very different. If you calculate the phase diagram for many realistic examples, what is a realistic example? A confining gauge theory which has a dual description. Right? This is what we were doing. We were taking confining theory and we were looking at the ADS picture, which has a dual description. Honest example means that these are confining gauge theories with supersymmetry. And the dual description is a supergravity geometry. So it's not just gravity, it's gravity plus supersymmetry. Usually they are 10-dimensional, they're coming from some string theory. In these theories, what happens is the following. The IR brain, which is the end of the space-time, is basically just some other circle becoming zero size in the IR. So it's the same picture that I drew, but instead of a time, just think of it some sixth dimension, seventh dimension, eighth dimension. As you go from the UV to the IR, it just smoothly ends. If I look at this in the 5D picture, it'll just look like the end of space-time, right? I go, 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 and then I just hit the wall, right? So this is the cartoon that what I was calling in the 5D picture as a UV, as an IR, is effectively some even higher dimensional geometry, where the geometry is such that it ends naturally in a smooth way at some point. And so in the lower dimensional picture, it will just look like an end of the spacetime. Okay. And this is what is shown, for example, in the Klebanov-Strassel solution, where there's some two circle which shrinks to zero. This is also seen in the Witten model, where there's some one circle which shrinks to zero. So this is a very generic thing which is seen in the examples that we know and have under control. The thing, what happens in these models is that the metric deviates a lot from ADS in the IR, which is to say that there is strong back reaction. And the phase diagram is very different. So this was recently calculated very numerically, and the phase diagram is different. So now I want to tell you details of this. So a simple way to model this in a very low-bro way is to say, in these theories, n is changing from the UV to the IR. N was like the Planck scale, right? N square was m5 cubed. So let's couple a scalar in which the coefficient of the Ricci is changing as the scalar changes, because that's effectively changing the Planck scale, right? So this is the action I want to consider. I want to make it more general. I have a scalar, phi, with a kinetic term and a simple potential, just a mass term, with epsilon negative, so it grows. As phi grows, these coefficients start with 1 in the UV, but they start becoming smaller and smaller in the IR. Because these are becoming smaller in the IR, Planck scale is reducing, which is to say n is changing, is reducing in the IR. Okay, so this is the motivation for this potential. Right? So this scalar starts with a small value in the UV, and as it becomes bigger, this effect of 1 minus phi over phi c becomes big. Phi c is a number which I don't know a priori. Phi UV is a number. So these are choices of this model, right? Which is a 5D model. I have to choose some parameters. You can go to the, so this was the motivating frame, but you can go to the right frame where the Planck scale is constant. And this means that now you will just have a constant Planck scale, but you will have a scalar with a more general kinetic term and a potential, which looks a little bit more complicated. After some simplifying choices, this is the potential and the kinetic term, this is the kinetic term and the potential I want to work with. The potential has a cosmological constant part and then just a part which looks like this. Okay, so it's a more general potential. You can do even more, which is go to another change of coordinates where you make the scalar canonically normalized, and now you just have one potential. The potential looks like this. So you have a cosmological constant part plus times some exponential, so sigma is the field, times some 1 minus exponential squared. If you expand it, you get the situation of the first part. You have the CC part, the mass term, the cubic, the quartic, and this is what I was motivating earlier, right? That you should have this, it will happen naturally in some theory. And in some extreme limit, it becomes an exponential potential, which are nice because there are known results for exponential potential that you can play with. Okay, so this is the setup that I want to study. But I do not want to be in the 4D picture. I want to solve for this in an honest 5D computation. And the zeroth step is to calculate the free energy, right? So phase diagram with large back reaction. Now remember, this TC was much smaller than confinement scale when there was a small epsilon, right? Now I'm not going to assume a small epsilon. So I expect that TC will become order lambda, right? I mean, this is the only scale in the problem. This is the expectation for the confined phase. What about the deconfined phase, right? We don't know what will happen in the deconfined phase. And I want to, at least in the next couple of slides, I want to focus on the deconfined phase in the limit of large back reaction. So after skipping a lot of details, which are numerical and analytical, and I can tell you more, here is how the free energy looks like. So for, again, some choice of parameters. So this is the free energy as a function of temperature, normalized in some way. The dotted line is the case with no back reaction. And the orange is a little bit more back reaction. The green is more, sorry, yeah. The yellow is more. The blue is a lot more. What happens is that the free energy starts, and actually at some point it turns around. So let me just zoom in. This is how these curves look like in more detail, okay? This is numerical right now. So the free energy goes up, and at some point it turns around like this. It's not a single-valued function anymore. In particular, so free energy is not single-valued, it has a turnaround, and there's a minimum temperature. There is no black brain phase for temperatures below a certain temperature. Okay, so this is actually very qualitatively different than what you were seeing in the other approximations.
When you say you're solving for back reaction, the equations you're solving are including the metric response, is it?
Yes, the metric and the scalar. So the equations you have are 5D Einstein's equations plus a scalar with a particular potential. And the ansatz you are beginning with is that there is a horizon. So you're solving for the
same symmetries as you have.
Yes, yes. So exactly same symmetries, just the fact that now the scalar contributes non-trivially to the equations of motion because I'm in the limit of large back reaction.
Yeah. So I remember in the translation between the CFT and the ADS, there's a mapping of things like large n to small parameters on the ADS side. What I'm remembering is large n was the thing that controlled the loop expansion on the gravity side. And there's two things. There's the loop expansion, and there's also the back reaction expansion. I can't remember how those translate to the CFT side.
Yeah, so Yeah, so there are two small parameters, right? Usually, well, the large n simply refers to the Planck scale in the 5D theory being large compared to curvature, right? Which you want. That's the loop expansion, right? Now the back reaction is simply saying that the stress energy contained in this scalar field is small compared to the Planck scale or compared to the cosmological constant, right? Which is set by the curvature and the Planck scale, right? Some combination of them which solves the equation of motion. So the I think if I understand your question correctly, earlier you were assuming that this deformation of the CFT was very small, so that the effect of that on the free energy or any quantity you would calculate in the CFT would be dominated by the CFT degrees of freedom n squared. Now that's not true anymore. The deformation is big enough, the CFT is so away from a CFT that now the answer will not just depend on n squared, there will be some contributions to it. And in the dual picture, it means that the corrections from the scalar can compete with those corrections just coming from pure GR side.
But n is still large, so you still have control over the semi-classical.
Yes, yes, yes. N is still large. And in fact, the way I have done it is I have rescaled n overall outside. So I've just assumed the scalar to be n scaled, right? Of course, the thing is, if the scalar value was much small compared to n, then you wouldn't see an effect. So the only place where this effect becomes big is when the scalar value is comparable to n. So you might as well just pull the n overall n out, right? And so, yeah. But in the end, it's just a matter of what limit is, where do you see the back reaction? So you have to just choose the parameters where you will see the back reaction.
Yeah, but what you really make strong is not coupling. It's not that you're making n large, you are breaking conformal symmetry.
Yes, yes, yes. It is still large n, but now the conformal symmetry breaking is big, which is what I was saying, that all the work can be put into two categories, small breaking of CFT or large breaking of CFT, right? And there is an expectation for what the answer is when the CFT breaking is small, but there is a different answer when the CFT breaking is large, and this is what we're trying to do, right? So
your horizon is always kind of, you compare the cosmological horizon and the ADS to the black brain horizon, you're always in a regime where one's bigger than the other.
Well, they're both flat. Because I'm an ADS Poincaré patch.
I mean, like the space-time curvature of there's this regime in which you put a small brain. I'm thinking that you have two length scales in your metric at some level, right? The temperature and the curvature, the ADS curvature. Are you in one ordering of those?
I think, well, if I understand. So I'm always in the limit when the curvatures are not blowing up. I don't know if that answers your question. They're changing.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they're changing significantly from the UV to the IR,
right.
But it's a smooth, I mean, it's not a singular solution, so nothing is blowing up anywhere.
And the back reaction part of it is now you'd always have the ADS thing responding, but now the temperature, how it gravitates is also.
Yes, 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 yes. And in the gravitational picture, all it means is that you solve the full equations for the metric, which now gets corrections from the scalar. And once you know the metric, you can calculate in the Euclidean picture what the temperature is, right? So this fact that this thing is turning around at the back, I'm calculating the temperature by just looking at the solution and looking at the right ratio, which gives me the formula for the temperature. And of course, it matches the right answer in the limit of small back reaction, so that gives me the trust that everything is good. But once I switch on the parameters, when the back reaction is big, it has a very different feature. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm a bit confused. So here you're considering a black hole now.
Yeah, a black brain.
Oh, black brain. With a scalar.
It has scalar here. Yes,
scalar
yes.
Is zero in the background.
Scalar is not zero, yes.
I see.
Yes, yes, yes. This is a scalar here.
That's possible in ADS, right?
It's possible in ADS, exactly. We are in ADS, right? You're not in flat space.
Okay.
But wait, there is also a solution where scalar is zero, I believe, as well.
Yes, there is a solution. Well, so the thing is that you choose the boundary conditions in the UV that the scalar is non-zero. So then you cannot have a zero solution scalar.
I see.
The boundary condition for the scalar is the deformation of the CFT. So you better have some deformation to begin with, right? Otherwise, yeah, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just to put everything in perspective, this was the picture before, right? This was the free energy difference without stabilization, the dotted line. With stabilization, the line moved up, and there was a critical temperature, which for the choice of small back reaction was smaller than the confinement scale. What I'm telling you now is that if you go to big back reaction, the curve looks like, I mean, it's a cartoon, the curve looks like the red curve. So the critical temperature becomes a little bit bigger because there is no epsilon now. But the thing is, it doesn't continue all the way to zero temperature. It turns around at some point. Okay? And if I get to it, I will demystify this. Right now, this is very mysterious. In fact, when I was working on this, we found this result almost 1.5 years back. And then I said, okay, this makes no sense. So I just threw it away, right? Then after 6 months, I was like, wait a second, this actually is the right answer. So, but I will tell you why it's demystified. Okay, so just. Now, so far, what I told you is numerical result, right? So it's possible to tell all these things analytically. Not exactly analytically, but under some approximations. So let me just flash the slides and I can tell more details. A useful gauge to work is to work when the coordinate, the scalar is the coordinate, right? Because the scalar is changing from the UV to the IR, so you can just make that as your extra dimensional coordinate. That makes life easier. And the equations of motion are simplified. I mean, they are writable on one slide, which was not possible in the earlier case I was doing. Okay, so you're solving for this geometry. The UV brain corresponds to the scalar being much smaller than one, and then there's a value of the scalar at the horizon, right, which corresponds to some coordinate. Right? There's some coordinate at the UV brain, there's some coordinate location of the IR brain. This is the ansatz you want to solve for. There's functions A, F, and B. And of course, F is 0 at the horizon, so this is what defines the horizon. You can solve for it. You can look at the equations of motion. Now, just looking at the equations of motion and massaging it around in the right way, you can derive the following formula. The location of the temperature, right, which is defined by just how the derivative of this is, right, because you can go to the Euclidean picture and the temperature is defined by just F prime in some way. So you can look at how the temperature changes as a function of the horizon location. Okay? And it looks the following. It's proportional to this term, where V is the potential for this scalar, and you are evaluating this function V prime over V squared at the horizon. Okay? So there is a scalar. Sorry, no. There's a scalar which starts from some value, sigma UV, and goes to some value, sigma horizon. This is the horizon location, this is the UV. You are calculating the potential of the scalar here and taking the V prime over V, I mean, this specific combination. And this tells you how the temperature changes with the location of the horizon. If you set the potential to 0, which is to say, go back to the nice case of small back reaction, it's 1/3. And then you can calculate it and it matches the normal answer. The interesting thing is that depending on what this V prime over V is, this thing will change sign at some point, right? And so it's a matter of when it happens. It's not a matter of does it happen or not. Sigma keeps becoming bigger and bigger. V of sigma keeps becoming bigger and bigger. So at some point, V prime over V will become 2/3, square root 2/3, right? And where that happens is where the temperature curve will turn around. And that's where you will get the minimum temperature. So that happens at V prime over V is square root 2/3. Okay? So because I can derive it in terms of a general potential, this is saying that this is not dependent on the specific potential that I motivated. If you started with a different potential, you would also get that. And actually, you can do more estimates. You can calculate the speed of sound squared, which has the same factor which appears here, which is saying that the moment you start hitting the critical, the minimum temperature, the speed of sound becomes imaginary. Okay, so this is signaling some kind of an instability that I was telling you, the classical instability. You can calculate the specific heat. Black holes in ADS have positive specific heat as opposed to flat space black holes. But once you go here, your specific heat diverges and then goes to negative. Okay, so this should give you a hint of what is going on actually. And finally, you can calculate the degrees of freedom, which is entropy over T cubed. And it's proportional to the potential to some negative power, which is telling you that as you go from the UV to the IR, the degrees of freedom are reducing. This is what we wanted to model, right? But this is, it turns out, generically true for the potential. Okay, so these are all, in some sense, new or not appreciated results, right, which people had somehow not thought about because they were not working in the limit of large back reaction. So just to summarize, the system shows a minimum temperature and leads to unstable branches of solutions that are not present in the limit of small back reactions. So this is just a cartoon of, this was the deconfined phase. At the minimum temperature, there is a second side. And when I say unstable branches, there are two things, right? Unstable because this purple curve is always above the blue curve, so it's thermodynamically unstable, higher free energy. But there's also a local instability, which is that the speed of sound is becoming imaginary. So any fluctuations will just become very big, and something will happen. What will happen, I cannot answer yet. Dynamically, what will happen, I don't know how to solve it yet. And so the picture is, before I go to the other example, sorry, I totally am out of time, right? Okay. So the picture is that, so here is my UV brain, here is my IR brain. This is the cartoon you should remember if you remember one thing. Right? So here is my UV brain, here is my IR brain. At hot temperatures, here was my horizon. And the horizon was slowing doing this, right? At some point, it crossed the IR brain location. The scalar was there. In this whole tree, the scalar was there. And it was becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So the horizon kept going more and more lower in the temperature. And at some point, the scalar became so big and important and back-reacted that this horizon cannot go further down anymore. It starts to hit this instability, right? Which is not the picture when in the limit of small back reaction. You can keep going, and the horizon can keep going forever till zero temperature, and you have infinite supercooling, right? So in some sense, this is saying that supercooling is a choice of how big the CFT breaking is. Now, just to flash a couple of things, this example is actually very, very generic and is seen in the other example. So if you calculate the Clebanov-Strassler black holes, there is a way to construct these solutions numerically, done by Alex Buchel, I think, who I have seen his name here on an office, so I think he's around.
He's not here today.
So he does this computation in a 5D geometry with 7 extra scalars, and it's a lot more complicated and very numerical, but you can get qualitatively the same features with one scalar, demystifies what is going on, just big back reaction. Okay.
Is the instability you're hitting basically the Gregory-Laflamme instability?
It's kind of a Gregory-Laflamme instability, because when the free energy is becoming higher, it's the same as the entropy becoming smaller. And so that's how the Gregory-Laflamme, one way to think about Gregory-Laflamme is that there are two solutions, but one has a higher entropy compared to the other, or lower entropy compared to the other.
It's also the brain is fragmenting into black holes.
So that part I have not shown yet, exactly. That end state of the Gregory-Laflamme instability, that which is usually in the black string case, right, that it becomes breaks like this. If you were to ask me to guess, I would say the black brain, when I'm already assuming it to be a black brain solution, I'm assuming it has a translational symmetry. The endpoint will not have the translation symmetry. So I have to put that as an ansatz in my solution and solve for it, right? So without doing that, I cannot tell you exactly if that is the endpoint of this. But all this is saying is that something like that will happen, because I expect that if local fluctuations can become big, then some place will become more displaced than the other, and it should just fragment into some non-uniform object.
Your diagnostic should work for you too, right? Because the fact that you start to get this, the horizon wants to...
Yes.
Wiggle.
Yes. So the calculation I want to do, which is not done in this paper, but I'm going to do it in another paper, is to calculate the quasi-normal modes of this, right? And you will find that there are some imaginary parts which will develop there, and this will tell you that okay, these are, I mean, the speed of sound becoming imaginary is a simple quasi-normal mode getting an imaginary part, but you can do it a much more systematic calculation and show that this is what's going to happen. So I think you're right. This is what's going to happen.
Physically, don't you expect to go into confined phase rather eventually?
That's another question that I expect to, but if you want to show it precisely, you have to answer the dynamics question, right? So far, I have only told you the free energy. Mm-hmm. I never told you the bounce action, the instanton, right? That job is on the shoulders of the instanton calculation to show how do you go, well, where do you go? Mm-hmm. Do you go from this black brain phase, which becomes unstable, to some broken black brain phase, and then eventually to some confined phase, or what, right?
Maybe you can go back to the stables.
For example, this would be the counter argument to that. How do you know you just don't get stuck here, right? I mean, probably not, but that has to be shown. I think the picture that I have in my mind is that this plasma will fragment into smaller plasma and then just disappear slowly. So it'll dissipate away and become just a confined phase. That has to play out in the 5D picture. So just to finish, in this calculation, which is this plot I took from that paper. You find a minimum temperature, you find that the specific heat becomes negative, the speed of sound squared is zero. It's exactly what we found. Of course, they have other curves because they have more phases in the theory. They have chiral symmetry breaking and not, which is, there's no analog of that in the simplified model. But we found something very similar, right? There's a curve which turns around at some point. Now, the thing is, this presence of a minimum temperature, it turns out, is related to an IR scale. If you have an IR scale, it will happen close to that IR scale. When you don't put back reaction into the problem, there is no IR scale that the black hole phase knows about. IR scale comes from the back reaction. The scalar has to be important, right? Because there is no IR scale without the scalar. So if you never included it in the thing, you will never know about the IR scale, and therefore you will never find the steam minimum. Okay? In the Clebanov-Strassler case, because there is an honest confinement scale, IR scale, you find this. And you can calculate that. This number, I don't know if you can see it here, T minimum over lambda confinement is 0.5. So it's not parametrically small or large, it's like right there. you can actually go to a much more well-understood example, ADS Global, okay, which, you know, maybe in the FeNO world we don't think about it so much, but in the more formal world, ADS Global is a very straightforward example. It also has an IR scale, the ADS radius. And there you can just compute the large and the small black holes in ADS. And there you will find again that there is a minimum temperature and there is a specific which is negative, which we know because now it looks like flat space black holes. So basically the analog of all that is going on in this story, right? Which, I mean, instead of touching the nose like this, it's like touching like this, but eventually you're coming to that. So that's why it's very, very generic. It's not just some special thing for a special potential, okay? And this is seen actually also in the Witten model with some more indirect probes, that there is a confinement scale and there is a minimum temperature and it's very close to the confinement scale. So many other examples show this, okay? Really the last slide, this is saying that if the minimum temperature is really close to the confinement scale, what about supercooling? You cannot have large amount of supercooling if your minimum temperature is very close to the critical temperature. Because the supercooling is a statement of you go past your critical temperature and you stay stuck in the wrong phase. But your wrong phase is not just, I mean, it's not doing anything. It's going to do something. At some point, you hit this instability and bad things happen. So you cannot be supercooling for too long. Saying another way, if you want supercooling, you have to be fine-tuned to make the CFT breaking very, very small in the infrared. Okay, so it's a fine-tuning. It's not a generic thing, I would say. So this is what I'm saying, that weak breaking of CFT in the IR, T minimum over T critical is very smaller than 1, and in the extreme limit is 0, so that's why it's not seen. When it's kind of becoming big, this is kind of order 1, and this is what is seen in the Clebner-Strasser example, in the Witten example, even in the ADS global. You can calculate this, and you find that these are 0.5, 0.2 kind of numbers. So I think I will conclude here because I'm way past my time. But early universe dynamics is very different, and we have attempted to include it systematically. There are open questions. For example, the bubble, the bounce action is something which is complicated to calculate, and there are some ways in which new sources of gravitational waves can appear, and these instabilities can do interesting things in cosmology, which we are thinking about. So I will stop here.
So are there further questions? So maybe I have a very quick one.
Yeah.
So in the first part, you skipped over the gravitational wave signal slide.
Right.
Can you very, very briefly explain the effect of epsilon?
Good, good. So the one simple way, so there are multiple sources of gravitational wave when you have first order phase transition. The one which is under most theoretical control or understood is the bubble collision. Okay, there are other sources of gravitational wave contribution. The bubble collision, you can calculate the power and the peak frequency of the gravitational wave, which will be emitted from these bubble dynamics. It is controlled by a parameter called beta, okay? And this beta is related to the bounce action, the derivative of the bounce action as a function of, or the derivative of the rate. So this is the rate, which is a function of temperature and bounce action. You differentiate, it's a function of temperature. You construct this quantity, d log gamma over d log t. This is beta, and this tells you something about the peak frequency and the amount of energy in the gravitational wave. What this is telling you is that if you plot this quantity as a function of temperature, as you go to lower and lower temperature, this, when there is no self-interaction, beta is becoming small. So gravitational wave is becoming enhanced, as it turns out. When you have self-interaction, this is not true. And so this means that the whatever sensitivity of your model that you are showing in the reach of gravitational wave experiments depends on whether the CFT breaking is big or small, right? So I didn't have time to talk about this, but yes, even from a very phenomenological point of view with gravitational wave thing, you will say, okay, look, I need to know, because otherwise I would be mistaken that beta is very small and big gravitational wave thing, but that's not maybe generic. So this is what I was showing, that the energy in the gravitational wave decreases as you go from no CFT breaking to some CFT breaking. The peak frequency also changes. Yeah, the peak frequency, scales with beta, so bigger beta is bigger peak frequency, but the energy scales with 1 over beta, so smaller beta is large energy, but if the beta is not so small, you don't have that much energy. So this is the story there.
Thanks. Okay. So no questions from Zoom, so if there are no further questions, we can thank the speaker.